chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today on the show, I'm talking with Stefan Senders, who's a baker and the co-owner of Wide Awake Bakery in Trumansburg, New York. And it's a really great chat. I'm excited to share it with you this week. We kind of get into it. We go a little deep this time about baking and connection and community and team building and the whole thing. And it's a really great talk, a very thoughtful fella. That's coming up in a few minutes' time. Just wanted to give you a couple of updates, let you know what's going on. This week, as you hear this, if you hear it on the launch week, it's the Kneading Conference week, the Kneading Conference in Skowhegan, Maine. But it's not in Maine this year. It's everywhere. It's actually a virtual conference where you can sign up, you can take the classes live, you can hear the talks live, and or you can go back and watch them on demand after the fact, which is pretty cool. And you know, they're making the best of an awkward situation with COVID, and I wish them well. In North American standards, the Kneading Conference is really one of the big ones. You know, there's like three or four grain gathering, bread baking, sort of baking conferences for folks like us, and this is definitely one of them. It's one of the first and biggest and best. And so, if you have a chance or if you're interested at all, check them out and sign up. I've never been to the Kneading Conference, but it's something that I really want to do, and hopefully they'll be able to do them live again soon. But in the meantime, this is a great way of doing it. And you know, all the big names, all the folks you know are going to be there. So don't miss out. And if you want to hear more about the start of the Kneading Conference and how it all began and that kind of a thing, head back in the show archives. One of the earlier episodes that we did was with Tristan Noyes, who's the head of the Kneading Conference. He's sort of the coordinator, the head of the main Grain Alliance, that kind of a thing. And we talk about both the Grain Alliance and the Kneading Conference itself. So I'll put a link to that show in the show notes of this show, so you can go back and listen to it, and then hopefully sign up this week and be part of the Kneading Conference. Dig in. What else is going on? Cindy and I are back from our camping trip up in Loveland Bay, which was excellent. It was so nice. Beautiful weather, gorgeous views, not much to do up there, which is just how I like it. You know, we walked around a bunch, sat at the lake, read a bunch of books. I spent some time kind of reflecting on the podcast and where we've come over the last 3 years and where we're going and things I'd like to do and little improvements and that kind of a thing. And that was nice. It was nice to take a step back and pause and reflect. And so I'm going to encourage you, when you get a chance, whether it's this summer, whether it's after Christmas, but to build that into your schedule and say, I'm going to take a few days just to step back, remove myself from the day-to-day of the bakery, and kind of reflect on what is it you want and what is it you want from the bakery and how can you get those two things a little more lined up than they are right now. It's almost impossible to do that when your head's down, working hard, you're tired, it's busy. You got a million decisions to make. Everything's going crazy all around you. Tough to reflect in that situation. So if you can step back a bit, you know, and take a bit of time for yourself, it comes a lot easier. Trust me on that. And if you get a chance to do it in nature, so much the better. Because being out in nature, you know, it's healing, man. It heals you. It really does. Something about big skies and mountains and trees or desert and canyons, doesn't really matter where you live, but if you can get out of this sort of concrete built environment and out in the land, it's a good thing. and it'll build you up. You know, when we got back from our trip, there was a message waiting for me from Charlie Emmers at Patchwork Farms there in Vermont, and he had heard last week's episode where I was talking about some hiking that we did on our first camping trip, and said, you know, when you get out here, there's some great hikes out here. We'll round up a few bakers and we'll do like a baker hike. And I have to say, I think that's probably the best idea I've ever heard of. That would just be a hoot. You know, head up on the trail, get somewhere guaranteed. We're going to have really good food and excellent conversation once we get up there. And, you know, who knows what could happen. So, if I do make it out to Vermont, I'm going to take Charlie up on that offer for sure. And who knows, maybe even sneak a recorder up there and tape some of it for everyone. But if I do it, I'll let you all know first so that you can come and join us on the hike. How's that sound? Yeah, that's better than hearing a recording. Let's just go for a walk. Maybe that'll be the next version of the podcast, is it'll be Baker Walks with Mark. And we'll actually go for walks and talk and record that, and that'll be the show. That's a good idea, I think. What else do we have here? Oh, yeah. On our way up to Loveland Bay, we stopped in to see our friend Martin Barnett. Martin's been on the show. He lives not too far from where I live now, and had a good visit, just kind of did the pop in and, you know, had a chat and saw how his garden was growing and that kind of thing. Martin's not baking over the summer, but he's just announced the fall lineup at Serafina's Oven, which is the name of his sort of bakery in the backyard with the wood-fired oven and the kitchen on the side, where he teaches and bakes for folks out of there. And that's what retirement looks like when you're a baker, is you stop your professional job and you just build a kitchen on the side and keep doing what you're doing. So good for Martin. But so it was nice to kind of hear his plans and talk about stuff. And then I got an email from him when I returned from our trip, because he listened to two episodes ago with the show with Kevin Scolo from Independent Baking Company in Georgia. And at the end of the talk, Kevin was sharing when he was out on a music camp out on the west coast of Canada back in the day before he got into baking. And the camp was at Powell River. And I thought, Powell River? I know Powell River. And we had this great chat about how, oh yeah, it's right close to where I live in Victoria and it's on Vancouver Island and that kind of stuff. And Martin reminded me that, no, that's not Powell River at all. Powell River is on the mainland of Canada, north of the city of Vancouver, on what we call the Sunshine Coast. And it's a really short ferry ride from Nanaimo, which is on the island, over to Powell River. And it's like, I know this. I've been there, but I got in my head that it was in a completely different spot. And what I was thinking of is a little town called Port Renfrew, which is near where I live and is on the island. And I got the two completely mixed up. And it was so mixed up that as we were driving up to Loveland Bay, we passed by the ferry from Nanaimo to Powell River. And I turned to Cindy and I said, what the heck's going on here? Why would you take a ferry from Nanaimo down around the southern tip of the island to the far side to Powell River? And she says, that's not Powell River, you idiot. That's Port Renfrew. Powell River is just across the channel. And it's like, oh, right. So yeah, so clearly I can't be trusted with geography. And Martin is now the official geographer of the Rise Up podcast. And I'm either going to have to clear any geography related details with him, or he can correct after the fact and we'll do corrections on the show. Cause I don't, you know, clearly I am a foreigner here and I don't actually understand the place where I live yet. And I get it because it's only been a couple of years out on the island and you know, it's lucky if I can find my way to the grocery store at this point. But so thanks for the update, Martin. I do appreciate it. I laughed my butt off when I got your email and said, oh yeah, I said that on the show and sent it out to everybody that I don't know where things are on the west coast of Canada. All right, that's it for news for this week. More updates next week, no doubt. More corrections, no doubt. So, Stefan Sanders, here's the deal. I guess I know a lot of bakers, and I messed up a little bit with Stefan because I've been following Wide Awake Bakery, which is his bakery, on Instagram, and I love what they're doing, and I love sort of the ethos of the place, and I checked out their website, and I was like, yeah, this is exactly my kind of place, and this is a place that you're gonna love hearing about and learning about. And so I sent an email off and said, hey, please come on the show and it'd be great to meet you and talk with you. And he goes, oh yeah, hey Mark, I haven't heard from you in ages, but love to come on the show and talk. And I'm like, oh, how did have we met? I was kind of embarrassed. I said, maybe we've met before and I've forgotten and I feel bad about that. Okay, but we talk about that at the start. So we'll solve the riddle right up front and then continue on. But I did know Stefan after all. And I just think he's an amazing guy. The Wide Awake Bakery is sort of this, it's a community supported bakery. All the flour they use is grown on their neighbor's farm. And it was started that way. It was like, we're going to bake bread with the wheat from this farm. And that's going to be the bakery. And they've been doing it now for 10 years and they're going strong and doing amazing things. And we talk about all of that. So enough of me yakking. Here we are, Stefan Sanders, Wide Awake Bakery in Trumansburg, New York. You had said, and I think in one of the emails that we swapped it, have we met before?
We've never met, but years ago, you used to send out a pretty regular email blast or something. And I always really liked that. And we connected once, I remember, right after you ended the bakery. I just reviewed our emails. I don't know what I had in mind. I said, hey, Mark, you know, you might be the guy I'm looking to do some project. And I don't know what
okay.
it was, but
cool.
You were just getting into something.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's so neat to hear those old connections and stuff. Yeah. Awesome. Well, then that's, I don't know. I've been really lucky. I still appreciate every time I remember, or I appreciate those old connections, the number that have been built up over the years. It's quite remarkable even when we had the bakery and especially before we opened the bakery, I thought, oh my gosh, I am totally on my own out here. Like there's nobody doing anything within 100 miles of where we live, like what I want to do. And it seemed so weird, you know, and then you'd find folks that not only is what you're doing, it's not the first time it's been done, but there's a long history and stuff as well. So
Mark, what were you doing before you started the bakery?
I was working for the provincial phone company. It was called like SaskTel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I had the serious government cubicle job. I worked, working at the head office, you know, miles removed from, you know, actual customers, except the company itself was, because it was it was owned by the provincial government and it was one of the very largest employers in the province. It was everybody in the province knew somebody that worked at SaskTel, it seemed, right? And they were always more than willing to share their opinions of maybe how their cell phone didn't work. Or my voicemail doesn't work or that kind of thing. Right. And it's like, okay, I'll do what I can do. so it was a strange job because I was, you know, totally anonymous, but everybody knew that, you know, everybody knew somebody that worked there. Yeah.
But what I'm curious is how did you make that jump? That's
quite a leap. It is. Yeah. Well, so for me, it was one of, I wanted to start my own business is on one hand, and the whole attraction to bread and baking was I was doing what I called like 100% head work. Like it was all, you know, you're all up in your head or you're just trying to influence other people to make a decision or make a change or that kind of thing. And I wanted to do something with my hands. I needed a bit of balance that way.
Yeah.
And baking had turned into a hobby, and then a bit of an obsession. And then it was sort of like, okay, you know, I fell in love with all the bakeries that I had visited just in traveling and stuff. And it's like, okay, how could I do this? You know? And then when I got hooked on brick ovens. That actually even almost came first as sort of a way to do this for real. And when I met Alan Scott and took one of his workshops, and he started waxing on about, you know, micro bakeries and serving your community and that kind of thing. It was just, everything was pinging off in my head. It's like, yeah, this is the thing.
Did he come to Saskatchewan or did
no,
you?
No, I actually, I went to a workshop of his in 2004 in Karamias, BC. So in the interior of British Columbia, there was an oven workshop there. And so we drove out. It's like a 2-day drive from Saskatchewan, and packed the kids up, and Cindy and I, and we all went out. And I spent, you know, the 3 or 4 days building this oven. And then Cindy would take the kids to, you know, out and about touring around, you know, usually over the one set of mountains to Penticton, where it was a little more developed. We were kind of in the middle of nowhere, where the oven was. But yeah, and so that's where I met Alan. And then he was still alive. He was still doing okay and still in California when I built my oven. And so we swapped a lot of emails when it got to the tricky bits, because I bought a set of his plans and especially doing up the chimney, you know, like actually doing the brickwork to sort of get the chimney going was breaking my brain. And I still have some, he would just like, he would draw a picture on a piece of paper and then scan it in and email it to me, you know, as like a PDF, and I would print it out and I would look at it. It's like, okay, I can do this, you know? And I think once I sent him a picture back of like, here's where I'm at, and here's, you know, that kind of a thing. But yeah, he was my first real mentor, you know? Yeah. And then after I got the oven built, when I was like, okay, this is amazing, this is exactly what I want to do, Then I went to SFBI. I went to the San Francisco Baking Institute for like 3 weeks and got sort of my second set of mentors in terms of, you know, like Michelle Swasson and Didier taught for a week there, and it was sort of okay. Mind blown again, kind of went from there. But
it's a great collection of mentors.
Yeah. But it was like when it got going, well, and I don't know if it was your experience, but once I kind of like discovered this group of people and these folks that were doing this thing, because doing the, and I don't want to get precious about it, but like, at the time it was like the artisan bread movement, right? Or just the, you know, a craft bakery or whatever you want to call it, but actually like really figuring out how the local ingredients worked and not using preservatives and chemicals and that kind of stuff. I was just hooked. I just fell in love with this group of people, and it was like, okay, you know, I want to do my thing. I want to build my little business, and I just want to be part of this any way that I can. It was so cool.
Yeah.
It still is, you know,
and generosity is extraordinary.
Yeah. 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 And like, I don't want to sound like an old guy, but like it's,
you got to own it.
Yeah, exactly. Eh? But it's like, so, because there's the community's flourishing, and I kind of think of it as a different community. It's a different group of people, but that same mode is kind of flourishing on things like Instagram and social media and that kind of stuff. But I'm kind of feeling my age a bit, where it's like, you know, I went when it was like, it was email, man. That's what we had. You know, that's how we connected. You just
the real old stuff.
Emails, and then you'd get on the phone. It was crazy. Yeah. but it's been a real treat now with the podcast to meet the new folks and go back and be able to sit down and talk with the folks that had such an influence over my early start too. You know, it's been nice.
Just curious, do you miss it?
There's a lot that I miss. There's a lot that I miss, you know, there's parts that I don't, we just came out of this crazy heat wave on the West Coast, and we've just been dying the last couple of days. And I just remembered how hot it used to get at the bakery, and it wasn't even so much the heat. It was the fear of, okay, it's so hot now, something is going to break. Like, I don't think my refrigeration can take this, or I don't, you know, that kind of a thing. And it's like, and I was just dreading what am I going to have to do? Like, what's going to break and how am I going to fix it? And how I'm going to deal with this? And so that was tough. But you know, what I miss is what, when I think of your place and what you guys are doing, like when I go through your website and I see sort of the community connection between the bakery and the things that you support that are kind of like, this is what the bread feeds, I think is the way you put it on one web page on your site. And yeah, that's what I miss. I miss like, okay, it's a holiday coming up, or it's a special time. There's something going on in the community and we can be a part of this through what we do at the bakery, you know? Oh, like, and you could do it. You could do it times 10, what we're able to do just as two people living in an apartment, right? Like, they had one of our friends, worked for the Red Cross and was coordinating like a Pink Shirt Day anti-bullying campaign and was doing the local thing. The local component of a larger movement. Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, we're going to buy shirts for the whole staff and we're going to make a big deal of it and make pink cookies for the Red Cross guys to use, plus to have at the bakery and get behind this thing and kind of get creative about, okay, what can we do to spread the word, right? Mm-hmm. And to be supportive of something that we believe in. And I love that aspect of what we were doing for sure, you know, and just, you know, baking at scale. that's something I totally love. That it's a special kind of tired when you're, you know, done a full day's bake and you're hot and sweaty and exhausted, but you got all this like racks of stuff to show for it. It's the best. Yeah. So have you been, were you involved right from the start with Wide Awake?
Yeah, so I started Wide Awake with Tor Oshner,
right?
Who grows our grain, and my wife Liz. And so it was the three of us at the very beginning. Tor had just decided to start a mill.
Okay,
he was growing, you know, food grade organic grains, and it was all kind of this nascent project.
Yeah,
and you know, I mean, it's one of those kind of, I think I've told this story so many times, but it's, you know, we ate dinner together and drank wine together and had some bread, and he really liked the bread. He said, "Hey man, you should do this. You should bake this bread out of my flour." And it didn't seem possible.
Right.
Yeah. Because I've always kind of assumed that bakeries and so on are really just money losing propositions, so that they're kind of, that they just don't work. And
right.
And I never really given it a lot of thought. And then that night I just sat up all night trying to think about, is it really possible? And, you know, by the morning it looked in the fog of morning, it looked like a possible thing. And then I think we probably spent another 2 years contemplating it and trying to figure out how to make it a real thing.
Okay.
And that was 12 years ago. So we've been open 10 years, but we've been working on the project for.
Okay. 12 years, so. Okay. Yeah. So that's. Okay. So yeah. So that is right around the same time that we opened Orange Boot. Then, or more or less, like within a year or so, because you know we opened 2011, in the spring. Okay. Cool. Yeah. It's that's it's neat kind of putting some time, or in my own mind, putting a time frame on that. Yeah. Well, yeah. And so Tor's the farmer and you and Liz are the bakers is kind of how that works.
Mostly I'm the baker. Liz is a partner and works with us. She runs a sheep farm. So that's,
oh, wow.
So the bakery is, you know, it's a hidden bakery. There's no sign. And
okay.
We don't really, it's not that if you came, we wouldn't welcome you. It's not that right. We're inhospitable, but we don't advertise it and we don't invite people in. And
right.
Our neighbors who come into the bakery.
Right.
And we send the bread out, to all the kind of standard outlets. So we send to grocery stores and restaurants and, you know, B&Bs and whatnot. And also to, we do farmers markets.
Okay.
And then, but really the core of our business is a bread share, a big bread CSA that we've had going from the very beginning.
Oh, cool.
It's really been the foundation of the business.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cause I wanted to ask you about that too, because it's, and so that was sort of right from the start.
That was right from the start. I thought baking was not really a good idea for a livelihood, and I'm fairly conservative in that way.
Right.
So I thought, well, if I'm going to take a risk here, I want to not make it a too big a risk. And
yeah, or spread it around a bit. Yeah.
Well, in our area, there are many farm CSAs, and they're great. And
okay.
So everybody knows how a CSA works. They know why it's a good thing.
Yeah.
We had friends who still run a beautiful farm called Sweetland Farm. And I went to Paul and Evangeline and I said, you know, I want to start this bakery and I want to sell my bread through a share attached to your share. Can you wait 2 years while I build it? And they're like, sure, man, go for it. So I felt like, well, I've got a market.
Yeah.
Right away. And yeah. and it worked, you know, better than I had anticipated. And we always anticipated and kind of built all our models and all our assumptions on very, very slow growth.
So right.
We're not one of those businesses where we will say yes to anything and stay up for days to do it. We tend to say no a lot and to try to keep things very steady.
Yeah.
Not in terms of like everything the same, but try to keep growth steady. And we're very interested in maintaining sanity.
Right. Right. Well, and so what were you doing before this infamous meal?
I was a researcher. I had a career in academia. And,
okay.
Before that, I was playing music. Yeah.
And you were just sort of like baking for fun?
Yeah, I was baking at home, and my wife and I had lived in Berlin, Germany for a couple of years while I was doing some research, and, you know, there's great bread everywhere. If you go into the funkiest supermarket, the bread is as good as any bread in this country. And
right.
So we came away just so accustomed to excellent, excellent bread. And when we got back here, we felt like, this is a desert.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
We felt the need really acutely.
Yeah. 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 And so then just kind of figure it out as you go. Is that sort of like, this is sort of something that you're just going to figure out for yourself until you make it bigger.
Exactly. You know, we came back and I practiced at home and learned a lot. And then we moved out to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Zingerman's is a beautiful, beautiful bakery with fabulous, fabulous breads. And so I ate a lot of that and kind of, you know, reverse engineered it in my kitchen. And
sure.
And I could do okay.
Yeah.
You know, not at scale. I was baking two loaves at a time.
Right. Right. And yeah. Oh, for sure. And well, and then, okay. So I've seen pictures of your oven, which is spectacular. Like you're still using the big wood, like the brick oven.
We are, yeah. We accidentally kind of acquired a two-deck electric oven and have been using that alongside it. But yeah, okay. The big oven's basically been hot for 10 years now.
Gee whiz, hey. That's so awesome. And how did you figure out that design? Because my understanding of it, and please correct me, is that like it's one of those with the rotating deck you can spin around, and so it's sort of like round on the inside. Was this something like how did you go about building that?
I'm not really I can bang nails and stuff like that, but I knew I wanted to do a brick oven. I knew I wanted to do a wood fired oven, and I'm very curious, and I don't have a lot of faith in my own knowledge, so I'm very interested in hearing from other people. So I tend to root around a lot and seek a lot of opinions and read everything. You know, I'm one of those people. And as I was doing this in our area, people kept saying to me, "Oh, you gotta meet Billy, man. You gotta meet Billy. He's your man," you know? And finally I got to meet Billy O'Brien, who is a fabricator, designer, kind of, you know, he's really a brilliant problem solver and
gotcha. Yeah.
And mentor. And I went to see him and I said, "Well, I want to build this oven," you know, and I had all these ideas about what the oven should be as a black oven, you know, and had the door in the back. I had all these, and I had identified all the things that I thought were problems, you know, well, the steam's got to be good and there's got to be light somehow, you know, and all these problems. And instead of addressing that, he said to me, "Tell me, what is a loaf of bread and what does it like?" And I thought, this is my man, you know? And
so
we just started talking about the history of bread kind of from prehistory till now and about, you know, the history of ovens.
Right.
And we looked at all of these designs together and, you know, decided that black oven was not going to work for us for our purposes. And so then we got to this point. I think it was, we were on the Bread Bakers list, Bread Bakers Guild list. And there was some survey question going around about on what oven did you bake your best bread? And everyone was saying, "Oh, it was on one of these, you know, the Yopi, the Spanish round hearth." And so then I started calling people who run them. And they all said, "I love it. I love it. I love it. But there are these few problems that I don't like." And we thought, well, you know, maybe we could solve those problems. And of course we introduced a few of our own, but So anyway, we managed it. A lot of trial and error and a lot of help from the entire baking community.
Right.
We made a lot of mistakes. And in the process, you know, I called Tom Leonard once, and I'm sure he doesn't remember, but I called him and I said, you know, What's the height of the ceiling on the Yopi? It's only 17 and a half inches. It's okay. You know, this was very helpful.
Yeah. Right. Cause he used to have one of those in Kansas, right?
Yeah. And I think he did some kind of repping for them or something.
Yeah.
He was very, very knowledgeable about
them. Right. But. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I just remember from the story in that Artisan Baking Across America book, like I just talked to Tom like two, three weeks ago, and I forgot to ask him about that oven. But I think that was my first exposure to that, the idea of, you know, an oven with a big wheel on the front that you could turn the deck. It's the cool. Yeah.
No, it's a very nice design. And
so cool. It was So how have things kind of changed for you over the last 11 years then? Like sort of for you and for the bakery.
That's a big question. I've gotten about 10 years older, and my kids have left home and all that. So my life has changed significantly. The bakery, one of the very lucky breaks we had was very, very early on, before we really had anything. Honestly, before we had anything at all, except the idea, I kept getting phone messages from a guy who said he wanted to be part of the bakery. And we didn't even have a bakery. We just had an idea, you know, and so I did not return those calls. And he kept calling. He'd call every month And for a year, I would get these messages. And finally, I'm like, hellfire, I'm going to pick up the phone. And he said, I'll come. Let me just help. And, you know, I said, I don't have anything. I got no money. I got no oven. Yeah. I got no bakery. I got nothing. He said, let me just come help you and we'll see how it rolls. And he did. His name is David McGinnis, and he worked with us for quite a few years, maybe 4 or 5 years. We both were basically starting from nothing, from a love of bread, an interest in bread, an interest in community work. And we both had a vision for the bakery and how it could serve the community. And we really, we had a very, we shared a visual aesthetic and a culinary aesthetic. It was, and I feel so lucky that he came in. It felt, you know, like kind of angelic intervention.
Yeah.
He, by the way, has opened another, a beautiful bakery in Colorado Springs.
Okay.
Called Nightingale Breads. You should check his work out.
Yeah, I will.
So anyway, it was just the two of us for a while. And then I don't want to name everybody, but we had a lot of folks kind of come through and very slowly grew. We're still very small. But we've always had a very steady crew. People come and they usually will stay for quite a few years. And so we tend to have a lot of embedded expertise. And as people come, they bring their own interests, you know. So we went through a long period of stenciling, and we went through, you know, we've just gone through all these all these phases, just depending on what our pleasure was.
Right. So, and it sounds so cool to me that somehow you're able to follow those interests or those kind of ideas. We're gonna slide over in this direction for a bit, or maybe slide over here for a bit, and folks come along with you for that, like in terms of like customers and stuff as well, right? That's kind of neat.
Yeah, I mean, at the core, the bread is very stable. We started dedicated to farmer ground flour, which is the mill, and dedicated to really trying to figure out how to make beautiful bread with local grains, and how to kind of, we've always been interested in trying to get the bread flavors to start differentiating at a really early point, you know.
Neat.
As opposed to, for example, using the same levain for everything. We try to differentiate that right from the get-go. And that's been true of everything all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you go, when it's just you, you're, you know, as I'm sure you know, right? You're very invested in the bread, and so we focus a lot on that. And then, as we became more able, we very quickly got interested in trying to figure out how to put the bread to use. So we did a lot of political protesting with the bread, and
Yeah,
a lot of donation work, and just sent a lot of bread out to a lot of different places. And I remember David was, he's so articulate. He said, we were trying to kind of just decide, you're like, can we figure out like what our foundational kind of rules are? Like, how do we decide what to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, he said, does it contribute to the health of our local community? And does it contribute to human thriving?
Yeah.
And those were the two rules. And if those two conditions were met, we could say yes. And so that was our guide for a really long time. And it was very, you know, it worked great. It didn't. Yeah. It worked great.
Yeah.
That was how we did that.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And I love how you said it, you know, putting the bread to use, right? Because like that's how am I going to say this? So I can't remember the first time I saw your logo. But when I saw the logo, I thought, okay, this is interesting to me, right? Like with the rooster kind of going off, right? And so there's there's energy and purpose to that logo, which always fascinated me. And then I was reading about you and reading about the bakery, it's like, oh, you have put into words and then into practice exactly what I think of when I think of the power of a bakery in a community and what it could be. And yeah, just that idea of, you know, we're gonna feed the people, but we're also, you know, feeding the community directly and indirectly, you know, sort of like through healthy customers, but also through direct action in that. And I love what I was, the more I learn about you, the more I love it. You know, it's just the way that you're able to get behind things like that.
But honestly, I don't think it's that unusual. You know, I think bakers, all the bakers I meet, they really feel baking as part of living a good and connected
life.
And so I feel really lucky to be a part of that.
Absolutely. Like, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think though, I'm going to give you, you know, sort of extra credit though, for the way that you articulate it. Cause it really, you know, this is probably not the right way. I my receptors are wide open to that kind of thing. And so I was just like, yeah. Bring it on.
But we, you know, I feel incredibly lucky and privileged. You know, our community is full of people who are working on the same wavelength and incredibly creative and incredibly generous.
Yeah.
So, you know, we worked on that logo with Q Cassetti, who's just, you know, a world-class artist. And she just said, you know, I'm on it with y'all. And, you know, when we thought about the name of the bakery, someone told us this story that they overheard someone else talking, saying, yeah, there's this bakery outside Ithaca. It's called the Can't Sleep Bakery. but we named the bakery Wide Awake Bakery because, you know, from our house, we're on the sheep farm in this valley, we're about 8 miles outside of town. And if we drew a circle, maybe a 5 mile radius around the bakery, we could count in that circle, you know, a dozen farms or artisanal producers. And I mean, like, CSA farms. We also have giant dairy farms. We got all that stuff, but we have these little farms and we have artisanal producers of cheese and, you know, meat and vegetables and mushrooms, and everything.
Right.
And our idea was that the bread, we didn't want to make a show of it. The idea was that the bread would somehow be under all these things. Like, what do you want with your charcuterie? Well, you want it on a piece of bread, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with the cheese? You know, you don't just put it on your hand. You got to have a piece of bread on there. So there's this idea of this thing supporting all of these other things. It was underneath them all, and it happened that there was a ferry boat that ran across Cuga Lake, and it was called the Ferry Wide Awake. And we always dream of having a ferry to take us across the lake, so we don't have to drive around. And it made a lot of sense that the bakery would be doing that work of ferrying all that food, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What a great story. Yeah. And so in the same way as the ferry's wide awake, you're wide awake.
And we've worked in partnership with a lot of, you know, again, I just can't stress enough how lucky we are to be here, because there's so much going on. So the farms, there's a tremendous music scene, and we've always been closely tied to that. And there's a beautiful cider scene now that's huge. That's happened in the last few years, maybe 5 years. It's really blown up. That's been huge. There's a circus scene. We have some, you know, we have Amy Cohen and her circus school, and they're doing great work. And
oh, wow. And just,
you know, it's just fantastic how much is going on. And honestly, that makes it easy to engage, because you always want to be part of these things. And
yeah.
And right there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like you've got your people in all, like, sort of people that you can click with doing all those other things. And it's just, what a great kind of soup to collaborate within and stuff, right? You can just, as many connections as you can dream up, you can do something.
Yeah. Let me tell you about a new project we're working on. It's very much in the developmental stages, but we're here at the bakery. We're looking, well, let me back up. Many years ago, Elizabeth Dick came to us from New York Green Markets, and they were changing June Russell, and they were changing the rules, the requirements for bakers at New York Green Markets. the new rule would require them to use a certain percentage, like 20% local grain.
Right.
And so it was a grant funded project in which they hired us to teach classes to these bakers. And so turned out that was fascinating. And
yeah,
I loved doing it and they loved it and it was really fun. So we did a few of those and then that started growing. So we did start doing a lot of teaching, and teaching became kind of a core element of our business and the way we structure, you know, all our work at the bakery. And then the pandemic came and basically shut that thing down. And for 2 years, we haven't been doing any of that. And that's frustrating to everyone. Our email is full of requests and we're full of naysaying.
Right.
So what we're about to do is build a teaching wing onto the bakery and to have a classroom and to have, tools that folks can learn with. And that's the kind of mechanical part. So we'll have that teaching room. And then what we're doing is we're joining forces with some other folks who do a lot of teaching here to try to create a collective of, education in the practical arts. So we're working really closely with Hammerstone, which is a building school for women. And we know a lot of other folks who are doing this. So we're just pulling this together. I'm really excited about that project. Basically trying to get a central clearinghouse where folks can come to the Finger Lakes, come to Ithaca and study building or study bread baking or study welding or study knitting or any fantastic things that are going on. And then that would all be available in a single site.
Yeah. It's like what they used to call like folk schools, except this isn't teaching old forgotten things. This is how you do that stuff in current times, right? Bring it up to date. Yeah. Like you're going to use it not just as a curiosity. Yeah.
Yeah. And what excites me there is just getting to work in partnership with all these people
totally.
That I admire so much. And
yeah. Yeah. What a great, what a great way of looking at the project, but also having all those people that you know and can get to know and sort of in and around you that you can build something like that sounds amazing to me.
Yeah.
Well, and so is that when you're planning out a project like that, is that an important part of the planning process is making sure that, you've got the folks in place that you can collaborate with?
Yeah. I mean, I really love to play with people. And so I'm always just trying to think of ways to play with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in that, I'm the same way, but I think I must have some sort of mental block or whatever, but just because I guess that's how I love to work now. And I always thought I liked to work that way. But during the time where we had the retail bakery, there were folks that we could collaborate on projects, but I don't know if I wasn't tapped into the creative forces in my own city or what, but it was just like, I would have loved to have done a project like what you're describing and saying, oh yeah. And here's some other people that we can do it together. I think there wasn't that let's do it together ness 10 years ago in Regina for me, right. I'll put the blame solely on me, but right. That's
but I remember a project that you did that the bottomless basket of bread.
Oh yeah.
That was brilliant, man.
Yeah. 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 Which was perfect. And absolutely, but what it was, I think that sort of the contrast on something of a bigger scale was, say putting together a teaching school or some sort of teaching area for cooking and baking and stuff. The model at the time was, okay, someone else will build it and they're willing to hire me to come teach a class at their thing, as opposed to how do we design a place together and we'll kind of co-fund and co-create.
Right.
That sort of next level of collaboration. But so things like that True Friends basket that we did and those kind of things were showed where our heart was and what we were trying to do within the community fully. And it's a small regret, and or certainly I wish we had done more of, you know, how do we put a bigger basket of food together that wasn't just even our stuff, you know, like let's bring it all in, and sort of, because, you know, and I think 10 years down the road now, I think there are a lot more things even in that community, even though I don't live there anymore, but, you know, a lot more stuff available to go in the basket, you know, which is a good thing.
I have to say, I think you should give yourself more credit. I thought that was a really beautiful project. And
thank you.
One of the things that I really liked about it was, it was so contained, you know, and a lot, these big projects, you know, most of the time they don't actually come off. And so these small interventions, mm-hmm. you can try them. And if they work, they work. You can end them. You know, we did during the pandemic, we tried all kinds of things. You know, we sent out art in the bags. We had some artists make art. We printed them up, you know, at significant expense, and then put them in the bags. And we sent poems out in the bags. Like, we're just trying to do things, you know, to connect and help people connect and to remind everyone in the midst of all that. I always thought this was really fun. Our bread share members come to a particular place, you know, to get their bread. And so we had Amy brought her circus, and we had music come, and then we set up a stencil cutting table and invited all our members to cut stencils that we would then take back to the bakery and stencil other people's bread with, because it would all go, you know,
grand. Yeah.
So over the months that followed, people would find their own art or see some of their own art on someone else's work or be taking their own art home. I thought that was a lot.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that idea. Yeah.
And very small scale, right? It's like the basket. It's just a thing you do. It doesn't take months and months to plan.
It's just a thing you do. And the magic is between two people that aren't you, you know, because like with the bread basket, it was when they passed it along to their friend. Yeah. That was where the magic happened for those two people. And same thing with you, right? You know, there's the person that makes the stencil gets some creative juice out of it. And then if they're lucky enough to see it on the flip side on a loaf.
Yeah. You're just facilitating that connection.
And you just have to walk. Like if that were me, I would just have to walk over and say, hey, yeah, I just got to let you know, like I made that stencil like that. And then you got a conversation going on. That is so cool. What a great idea.
I suspect we didn't think of it, but it was really fun to do.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's how this all works though, is that, you know, the ideas are all around, and that's what I love about recording these conversations and putting them out, because somebody somewhere is going to get the idea. It's going to land just that a little bit differently. They're going to go do something and it's going to be amazing. And it's going to be, and you're going to be, where did you think of that? And it's like, I don't even know. And maybe it was because they were listening to the show. So cool. Yeah. Well, and so with the pandemic it sounds like there's quite a big impact in terms of future projects and stuff, and sort of like, I don't even want to say side, but certainly like with the market in New York, how did it affect the bakery itself and like the CSA and that kind of thing?
Well, in the bakery, you know, bakery life, as you know, right, is very intimate, and it's a very small space. And there were, you know, five or six of us in there all the time. And because we weren't socializing anywhere, you know, we basically all became our own best friends all the time. And I love that. As a baker, the ebbs and flows of people's needs was pretty striking. So there was a brief hoarding period. I don't know if you remember that. And that nearly sent us off the rails. And then after that, of course, everybody had tons of bread in their freezer. So there was a corresponding dip. And we have a lot of older folks that we bring bread to. And, you know, we spent winters distributing bread outside in the cold so they could just do car pickup so they wouldn't have to come into any buildings.
Right.
Got us very involved in the food distribution network. So there are quite a few, food banks and food distribution networks. And so we've been, fairly active hooking up with them and sending a lot of bread that way and just establishing baking relations for the kind of soup kitchens and so on.
Right.
And it totally messed with our teaching. I mean, that was a real drag.
For sure. And are things, where are things at these days now? Are in New York, or is it kind of getting back?
Everybody's vaccinated pretty much. And
nice.
Assuming that the variants don't come and knock us all down, it feels pretty good. A little, you're always on a little bit on edge.
Sure. Totally. Especially the reopening is going to be more uneasy than the rapid closing down from a year ago. It's sort of like this is happening. Boom. This is the new world. And this transition is going to be a little bit messy.
Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get there. I've been soaking up a lot of gratitude for the bakers that I know, and like the bakers that I go to now, but also the ones that I'm talking to. Is just like, it's kind of like pretty much across the board. It's been, a very big shift, wild uncertainty. And then it's sort of like, well, we figured out our place and how we can help in the community, right? It's kind of just that pattern tends to repeat. And it's like, I'm just so grateful for all the bakeries that were in place and were going, before this started, because it's like, they're serving. I think it kind of underscores how, you're serving real community needs with the work that you do.
I agree with that completely. I mean, both feeding people and the kind of spiritual need. And I should say also, we distributed a tremendous amount of flour from Farmer Brown Flour, and we became an outlet. And
oh, cool. And,
oh my God, tons of sourdough starter.
Right.
Instructions.
Yeah.
So that was very interesting.
Yeah. Well, and that's something that we haven't really talked about much. Like, because at the very start, like you said, it was, between you and Tor the Farmer, it's like, okay, we're going to farm using that grain and that kind of thing. And how's that relationship kind of continued? And is it still going strong? And is that still sort of the foundational piece of the bakery?
Oh, yeah, entirely.
Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, both in terms of at the very practical level, that is our flour. These folks are my buddies, we see each other a lot, and these are really important relationships, and can't stress enough. I love that. That locally grown is coming back. It seems like, 10 years ago, it wasn't really a thing, but now it's a thing. And milling is getting the attention it deserves. And, that's been huge for us.
Yeah. The that sort of ubiquitous ingredient called flour has started to go the way of a lot of other things now, where it's sort of like, no, the variety that it is, where it's grown, who's growing it. And then if you've got bakers with the skill that can pull the flavors and pull the characteristics out, you're in, it's a beautiful thing.
It is challenging for bakers, I think.
Oh, totally. Well, and it was something that I know I barely dabbled in when we had our bakery, and it wasn't available at the time. And what was available is, everyone's just kind of figuring it out, but there's some real, that's probably the thing that's grown in leaps and bounds over the last 10 years, is just really the, both knowledge and varieties and the diversity of grains and flours that people have can get now. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another part of our work here is also all, I think all of this comes through Tor's work, mm-hmm. but working with folks up at Cornell and with at the Land Institute, developing Kernza and doing bake trials with Kernza and growing trials and really trying to and doing trials with different kinds of wheat. And, you know, I think we're part of a community of people loosely connected who are all working on that same project.
Yeah.
Trying to get more grains out there, more stable grains, ideally more bakers who know how to handle them in a way that they can feel confident and consistent.
Yeah.
That's a challenge.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like you've got, you're in a great position between you and Tor on the farm to be the, an example, like that beacon for other people to replicate in other areas, right? It's like that relationship between the baker and the farmer and the grain that they're growing. Like that's an amazing story when it works. And so it's nice that I'm glad to hear it's working well and that you're, you know, you can be that example for folks.
Yeah. We all feel extremely lucky.
Super. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's what a cool story. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk, Stefan. It's there's layers to the work that you're doing that I absolutely love. And I'm so grateful that we got to kind of unpeel a couple and talk about some of the things that you're working on. It's some of the images on your website, and it's always you guys are a genius at this, but there's some pictures of, you know, a couple guys playing chess in the bakery. You know, here's a little music thing going on in the corner. Not while folks are working, but it's got this very much like, this is our place. We're going to work hard. We're going to get everything covered in flour. And then we're going to have even more fun doing something else in this space after. Is the sense that I get.
Well, you know, when we first started, you know, we had a lot of room in the bakery because there was a few of us, and we had arranged our schedules. None of us wanted to get up early.
Yeah.
So we had this thing, we would work late, you know, and that was our plan. And so we would invite musicians and bands over to come and rehearse in the space while we were working. And, it was entertaining for them. It was entertaining for us. It was an awesome time. And I mean, one great night, this guy, Alex Bevin is his name. If you look him up, he's an awesome musician. We met him at the farmer's market and we're just yakking, and he used to be a baker, and we're saying, yeah, sometimes we have people come over to places. I'm going to come play. I'll be there tonight, you know, or tomorrow night. And man, he came and just rocked the house. It was beautiful. So anyway, we did that quite a bit.
Oh, nice. And the implication being maybe you don't have the space now. Is that,
Yeah, I mean, since that time, we are producing a lot more, and we've kind of, you know, we're kind of folded in and involuted a little bit, trying to make use of every little corner. Yeah. So it's a little tight. So that's actually, you know, another benefit of this teaching space is a kind of party space. We really like to have nice parties, and once we'll clear the whole bakery out, but now it's a little hard.
And not to mention, you know, a little bit of plotting, maybe some scheming. Get, you know, plant use that new space as the springboard for another 20 projects around the community as well. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking the time, Stefan. What else do we need to talk about? Did I miss something that you were hoping we cover?
I think that one thing that I would just, you know, I feel incredibly lucky to have the people that I have at the bakery. And you know, Jackson Rokier has come and like totally developed our Vinoiserie program, and it's fabulous, like crazy fabulous. And that's, you know, almost all his work. And Nick Pilato and Capco. I mean, these are, I don't know, saying names is ridiculous at this point, but what I really want to say is the people who have come to the bakery and who have stayed and who have dedicated themselves and found some kind of home there, you know, have brought so much creativity and so much skill and so much artistry and dedication. That's been, you know, an unbelievable experience to have that.
Right on.
And honestly, part of I see my role now, you know, there was a time when my role was, you know, mix the dough, and I still do a lot of baking, but my I see a lot of my attention now being, I direct it towards making people feel at home and trying to find ways to nurture their creativity and find places for them to kind of stretch out and grow. And then when that, you know, I'm very conscious about burnout. And as you know, right, it's tough in baking to avoid burnout. And so we're really conscious of that. And I always am trying to look for new projects for people to do when they're ready, so that they don't feel trapped in that. You know, just trying to turn it into a creative space rather than a production space. Like, it should be production, but it's got to be a creative space. Otherwise, why even go? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, good for you. Yeah. Well, you're dead on. It's like, that's a totally different feeling coming into the bakery in the morning when it's like, you know, I'm a creator working in a creative space as opposed to, you know, I'm a cog on the line. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. And this doesn't all happen on the back of one person for sure.
You know, there's another thing that's really been on my mind lately.
Yeah.
Which is homeliness.
Okay.
But I've been really getting into appreciating ugly bread. I mean, we still throw out a lot of bread. Like, right, it's like 110 degrees in the bakery today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're lucky to get any bread out of there that's good looking. And a lot of it is, but not all of it. And we throw a lot of it away. But I really dig that, you know, I know Instagram is full of these loaves of bread that should be in museums. And I know I've tried to emulate those and be part of that. And I totally dig that. And I get when you're the baker, like, you're always striving for that, to make that, you know, beautiful, beautiful thing. But, you know, man, people have been eating homely ass bread for centuries, and it's been supporting them and sustaining them. And there is a real beauty in that. And so I've just been digging on that and looking at these loaves of bread, trying to see the bread soul in there. And anyway, so that's been very much on my mind lately, even though we're really into beauty, like at the
bakery,
we are really into it. We strive for it and love it and appreciate it. But the homeliness has been really growing on me.
Yeah. Right on. Oh, well said. Thanks for sharing that too. I agree with you. It's with some of the coaching stuff that I'm doing now, when we get together as a team, and we're always striving to make the workshops that we're running, you know, absolutely perfect. And and I keep saying, you know, there's beauty in that imperfection too, right? Like if there's nothing wrong. Or in fact, should be encouraged that people know that this was made by actual people, right? You know, real life people in battling the heat, battling whatever, just doing our best. And there's going to be some variety, and that's a beautiful thing. So, that's the. It's almost like with Instagram now, and not just with bread, but with anything on social media, you have to say, like, you know, this is kind of. I'm not going to say this is fake, but this is highly curated content, right? Yeah. People aren't just putting every sixth loaf at random up here. So, yeah, right on. Well, hey, well, thanks a bunch again.
Thanks, Mark.
I really appreciate the talk for sure.
Appreciate it.
And that was Stefan. What a fella. I love what they're doing so much. It was a really great talk. This is on a personal note, this is one of my favorite talks in a long, long time, because I think we really got into a little bit of the why we do this work, you know, and the power of what it is that we're able to do by making good food and sharing it with people and then leveraging that good bread for the greater good. And so it was an absolute joy to explore that a bit with Stefan, and great to get to know him better and get to hear about the bakery. So if something grabbed you with this conversation, and something's kind of like sticking with you, and you want to talk about it, you want to dig into it a bit more, or if you just want to say hi, head over to riseuppod.com. First off, there's all the shows are there, like 143 episodes that you can listen to all of them. And if this is, if you're new to this, go back in the archives. There's some amazing stuff in there. But also, you can just send me a note from the website or just email me at Mark, that's Mark with a K, at riseuppod.com. And let me know what you think of this talk. Let me know what you think of any of the shows. Let me know what you're up to. I'd love to hear from you. And I'd love to get to know you better as well. So drop me a line. Always love to get emails. That's Mark at riseuppod.com. Okay. Until next week, have a great week. Work hard. Keep making the good stuff. Reflect if you can. Get out in nature if you can. And we'll talk next week. Happy baking. Bye-bye.